I'm just giving you the tiniest bit of information about this new book. New novel follows three college students graduating in the midst of an economic downturn. Unemployment around 10%. Characters cope any way they can. They move out of home. They bust tables. They apply to graduate school. One flees the country entirely on an adventure running from the recession at home to volunteer in India. Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Jeffrey Eugenides thought this was a great idea for a story. It comes a little bit from his life, but his new novel is set in 1982, not 2011, even though it sounds very familiar today. It's called The Marriage Plot, and Jeffrey Eugenides is in the studios with us today. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let me just ask you, before we talk specifically about this book, which it seems to me is an homage to the classic kind of love triangle we associate with, say, Wuthering Heights. Is that fair?
It's fair. It's an homage, but not a recreation of those kinds of books.
But you definitely believe in the power of those kinds of stories.
Well, marriage is the great subject of the novel. You can think of the Jane Austen novels that are about young women finding a husband, and they usually end with weddings and her comedies. And then as the 19th century goes on, novels about marriage became darker, more tragic. Anna Karenina is a novel about the tragedy of marriage and the prison of marriage. And Henry James, The Portrait of a Lady, is also that way. So I grew up reading those books and loving those books, but they're not available to the contemporary novelist. And what I wanted to do and what I hope I've done is write a marriage plot that is true for the social conditions now, conditions for women and men in general.
You know, so many people criticize contemporary American fiction as being just excessively psychological, sort of in the cranium and sort of stuck there. I'm struck by how in this book, The Marriage Plot, marriage itself is a perfect frame for a psychological look at relationships, but without being so completely navel-gazing.
Well, of my books, this one is the most in the cranium. I have to confess that. I would try to go very deep into character with this book, but
it's more than one character. Yeah. It's not just one character that you're in the cranium of. It seems to me,
that's why it's not like a traditional marriage plot. It jumps from character to character, but it is about three characters whose ideas of romance affect their lives. So in that way, it's it's not a psychological portrait in that way.
Do you think that the economy in the 1980s when this book is set is the sort of sense that as you start out in your life, you can be as wide-eyed as you want, but you're sort of slapped in the face by the realities. Is that a driver of this story and your story?
Well, I graduated in the midst of a recession, but I was an English major and was so unemployable anyway, I hardly noticed. I wouldn't have gotten a job in the booming times. But thinking back about it, I do remember what a difficult time it is. You're sheltered in life and in school all the way to 22, and suddenly there you are out in the world, and you have to figure out how you're going to make a living and who you're going to be, what kind of career you're going to have. I found it very, very painful, and so I was kind of revisiting those times.
You know, there's a couple of lines in here. This book is so full of spectacular lines, but I want to talk, you know, sometimes there are lines in your book which actually are all books themselves. There is
I would write
this
more
line
books
here. Yeah, I mean, but for instance, if Mitchell, speaking of one of the great characters in this book, if Mitchell was ever going to become a good Christian, he would have to stop disliking people so intensely. But it was maybe asking too much to begin with Herb, the person he's talking to. I mean, that is about the nastiest line, but it's also the most self-revealing line that you read in this book. It's a terrific twist.
Well, Mitchell's, you know, he's on a religious quest, but there's another line where it says the hardest thing about being religious is other religious people. And he has that problem. He's sincere about his belief, but he's very skeptical of religion, and he's sometimes put off by the people he has to be around.
So it's sort of a play on the Sartre, where hell is other congregations,
yeah,
I guess.
Right.
In your upbringing, were you on a religious quest and equally skeptical of the quest you were on as you were on it?
I was brought up irreligiously. I was baptized Greek Orthodox and then barely taken to a church. So when I finally got to college, I became aware of how ignorant I was about religion and how much religion had impacted history and obviously literature. So I started just reading the Bible and reading religious thinkers to fill this ignorance that I had. And it actually resulted in a genuine interest in myself to try to figure out what was true about religions. It was difficult to write this character of Mitchell because the balance between skepticism and sincerity had to always, you know, be there. And I didn't want him to, I didn't want to make fun of him. I didn't want him to come across as a fanatic. And yet I wanted to show that he's an intelligent thinking person that has doubts.
Well, you say balance between skepticism and sort of religious mission. I would say tension. There's a real tension between these two. And I'm wondering if, I mean, for instance, one of the scenes in this book is how your character approaches going to Calcutta, mm-hmm. an experience you had.
I did.
And how that experience begins as an external kind of view out of the windshield of his own reality, and how then it becomes internalized, that you begin by having an adventure because you don't know what the hell else to do after you graduate from college. But then gradually the experience becomes really a part of you, and then the real business begins. How do you write that?
Well, the idea is that, you know, traveling is the first way a person can become somebody else. When you get away from your family and you get away from everyone who knows you, you can become who you want to be. So that happens to Mitchell. And then he decides to test himself. He really wants to see if he can be a good person or live a saintly life. And so he ends up in Calcutta working with Mother Teresa and finding out the limits of his altruism.
And expressing some profound contempt over just what that experience is like.
Well, I wasn't taking a Christopher Hitchens view of it. I found a lot of very admirable people when I was working there. And to imagine the lives of the nuns day after day for their whole lives, taking care of the poorest of the poor was something I haven't forgotten. I've been trying to write about that for 30 years since it happened, but I never found a proper place to put it until this novel came along.
Envy of the simplicity of their relationship with the people that they serve without all the baggage of what am I doing here, who am I, that kind of thing?
Envy of the purity of their lives and the simplicity of it. Of course, I was young. I was idealizing them as Madeline idealizes romance. There's a lot of dreaming going on in this book, which is part and parcel of being 22.
Is this a love song to marriage or a cautionary tale about the perils of the frame?
You could read it either way. You could read it as a cautionary tale. You could read it as a practical guide to marriage, because people are making sometimes hasty and incorrect decisions in this book and learning, what love might really be or the kind of person they should marry. Mm. And you do have to go through a few missteps sometimes before you learn that.
Jeffrey Eugenides is the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Middlesex, and his latest book is The Marriage Plot. Can we talk about Detroit before you go?
Absolutely.
I mean, this is the Detroit moment. They're in
Except
the National
the Tigers,
League.
Tigers well, lost
the Tigers
last night,
lost, but was, still yeah. with the Lions 5-0.
Yeah.
The Tigers resurgent. I mean, the NBA might not have the Pistons this year, but as a Detroiter, help me out here.
Well,
this is a reversal of reality.
All I do is watch Detroit sports teams, and you can only watch them around here when they're in the playoffs, of course. So I'm the only thing bad about my book tour is I'm missing the series and some of the playoff games.
If you say that all you do is watch a Detroit sports team as a life quest over the last 20 or 30 years, that would make you a very dark individual, although this is a very happy moment.
Let's not forget the Red Wings.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. There's always something. Right. Oh, Jeffrey Eugenides. Good luck to the Tigers.
Yes,
and I know Celeste.
They're coming back.
They are coming back. I know Celeste is praying for the Tigers as well. Jeffrey Eugenides, Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Middlesex and The Marriage Plot. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.